All right, ladies. Up.
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to the Faster Skeeter Podcast. In this episode, we talk with Doctor of Physical Therapy, Dave Sislowski. Dave is based out of Bend, Oregon, where he maintains a practice, and he tries, like the rest of us, to be on snow as often as possible. Analyzing the biomechanics of skate and classic skiing is one of Dave's passions. He works with a range of skiers, from recreational athletes to elite skiers on the U.S. Nordic combined team. Okay, time for the interview, which took place at Dave's office here in Bend. Let me get you to introduce yourself.
I'm Dave Sislowski, physical therapist, work with the Nordic combined team, have my doctorate in physical therapy. I'm also a certified strength and conditioning specialist.
My roadmap might be all over the place here. It seems to me, living here in Bend, that you kind of have a niche with Nordic skiing.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come to be? And
one of my big goals when I went back to graduate school, I did a lot of ski racing. I started kind of late in life as a Nordic racer. I came into it when I was in college, actually. So I went to St. Lawrence University in upstate New York, and I had always skied for fun, but never really got into it as on a competitive level. And then once I got there, I started skiing a lot more, really enjoyed it, started to get pretty fit, and my friends asked me to jump in a race, and I did, and I did pretty well. So I was able, coach was there, and he said, "Do you want to ski next year?" And I said, "Sure." So I was a walk-on, and I made the team, and then wasted the next decade of my life racing on the national circuit and pack fodder most of the time and doing a lot of marathons. And but because I came into it as an adult, basically, I had to catch up. And so I became very technique oriented. And that's really how my brain works. And so very biomechanical in how I think about things. I'm a kind of a physics guy. And so when I decided I wanted to become a PT, one of my big goals was to basically parlay all that experience I'd gotten with learning about skiing, applying it to myself, also coaching and teaching skiing along the way, to then apply that to, you know, basically all the education that a PT gets neuromuscularly and neuromechanically, and apply that to skiing and hopefully help, you know, the top level skiers in the country not only stay injury free, but also maybe get better. So that's really what I wanted to do.
So I know that you lived in Bend for a while before mm-hmm. you left for school.
Yeah.
How long were you away from Bend?
So I was gone for three and a half years. So I moved here originally in 1999. I was skiing for the XC Oregon program. And then once I was kind of done with racing, I went on and I helped run. I was the coordinator for the physiology lab up at the college for a few years while I was doing kind of pre-med stuff, and then got into PT school and moved to Portland. So I was in Portland for about 3.5 years and then moved back.
I'm curious, from the spectrum of sports, is skiing, like both classic and skate, is it as complex as we all think it is, or is it more akin to, like, well, you're simply just walking, but you have ski, if that makes sense? I'm just curious if it's a complex biomechanical sport.
Oh, it is. I mean, if walking is a complicated, you know, biomechanical and neuromuscular thing to do, you know, the amount that your brain has to coordinate while you're just walking is huge. And I love coaching skiing, especially masters. I get out there at Mount Bachelor, you know, at least once a week to coach. And it's really fun for me because I can basically diagnose everybody's musculoskeletal problems just by watching them ski. So basically, the most challenging PT exercise you could give somebody looks a lot like skiing. So yeah, it takes a lot. Now, the thing that, you know, and kind of the way I approach PT is that it is an inherently really complicated activity that requires a lot of strength, a lot of coordination, obviously a lot of endurance, but you can distill that down to very simple things. So PT for me is kind of that way too. I can describe something to somebody about everything that's going wrong with their running, let's say, and their head's spinning by the time I'm done explaining it to them. But then I tell them, I'm only gonna have you focus on two things, and it's gonna fix like six things. And it's the same thing with skiing. You can, even though it's complicated, you can give somebody something that's very pointed and really easy to do, or at least to think about. It may not be easy to do and accomplish, but they don't have to think about 10 million things all at the same time.
At the elite level, and some of the athletes you work with, what are some of the common injuries that you see associated with mm-hmm. Nordic skiing? And the other piece of this is, what do you see as room for improvement at the elite level right. just categorically. And right. I'm sure it depends on the athlete.
It's interesting because what you see is problems at the elite level are also problems all along the spectrum. And this is true in a lot of different sports. So you can look at, you know, for instance, you know, I've looked at video of NFL players doing box jumps, and you think there's these big, strong dudes that, you know, should be able to rock this stuff. And you watch them do a box jump, and their knee stability, basically their hip stability, is so poor. You can see, you know, how they're at such a high risk for having like an ACL injury, basically, just in doing a box jump. And so just because you're at one end of the spectrum, actually, a lot of times it's pretty amazing to a lot of us that high-level athletes function at the level they function at in terms of the mental tenacity, and because biomechanically sometimes they're a mess. I mean, you really break it down and you wonder, like, how do you do what you do? You can run a 356 mile, but you literally can't stand on one foot. Like, how does this happen? You can jump off a ski jump at 50 miles an hour and fly, you know, 150 meters to 120 meters in the air, but you can't do a squat. Like, how does this work?
How does that work? Like, what would
what it does is it really speaks to the body's ability to compensate. We're great compensators. There's six different ways for you to achieve any movement in space. There's a lot of redundancy built into the system. And just like I tell all my patients, whether it's, you know, whether it's gold medalists or it's your everyday Joe who just wants to walk around the grocery store pain-free, you know, I'm always asking, what muscles are you using to move through space? Are you using those muscles in the right sequence? And are they strong in that sequence? So if the answer to that question, any of those actually, is no, then you're going to end up with problems along the way. And you see it through the full spectrum. So basically, the problems we see with elite level athletes are the same problems that we see with people that just like skiing for fun. So, you know, we see a lot of patellofemoral issues. So basically knee pain, foot and ankle stuff. And we can touch a little bit more on that. I would put under that category kind of like the compartment syndrome stuff, Achilles tendonitis kind of stuff. We see some shoulder issues sometimes, and then back pain. You know, those would be some of the big things that kind of pop out.
And when you get people, and maybe you already spoke to this, but you get people in here who are world-class athletes, but who are having issues, is it still a function of lack of muscle development or some sort of neurological pathway that they're not engaging
right
muscles properly?
You know, it's funny because I've been thinking about this, you know, knowing that we were going to sit down together, and, you know, we had talked about some other skiers and their shift and how they're dealing with their lifting programs. And what I find a lot with, you know, elite level athletes, it's a motor programming thing. It's a, you know, they're strong, they're very strong in certain ways, and they're not so strong in other ways. And it's not that they don't have the strength available to them. So part of the testing process we go through in the clinic is, you know, evaluating, okay, are you functionally strong with this? Which means that the brain knows that it has the power to use, and it uses it with specific movements. Or does it use something else? But when I set you up and actually test whether that strength is available, it's still there. So a good example is, you know, I have somebody do a single leg squat as I'm evaluating them. Do I get a lot of knee deviation? Do I get a lot of quad dominance, basically, to compensate for the fact that their hips are weak? Maybe. But then I get them on the table and I actually test their hip strength and whether or not their glute muscle is firing. And they're strong as can be. They can hold me up. So I tell them that this is a good thing, right? You have the strength available, and maybe you've been training it in the gym, and, you know, for years and years and years, your brain just doesn't know how to use it right. So we have to bridge that gap, basically. So that's what we see with a lot of these folks, is that they have the strength available sometimes. They just need to learn how to use it the right way. And that's where the creativity, you know, from my perspective comes in. You have to design exercises, and you have to show them with their lifting how they need to actually fire these muscle groups. And then that's the repetition of that. And then also combining it with things like skiing. So, I mean, it's, you know, you can get it in the weight room, you can get it out while they're training. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do it.
If you want to speak about your own, you know, your own biomechanics, mm-hmm. what's the biggest change that you've made since you've had this education, you know, for pre-PT, you know, before
right.
becoming a physical therapist
right.
and post? How has your skiing changed?
Ironically, I think the difference is I'm way more focused in the gym. So my gym routine is only about 45 minutes to an hour long, but it's pretty focused and it's pretty well-rounded. So I'm not necessarily doing ski-specific things in the gym, but I'm building a lot more. I'm way stronger than I used to be. So that's the first thing.
What are a few things that you're doing?
I'm doing a lot of leg work, and in particular, a lot of single leg work. So getting away from the traditional kind of back squat, that kind of is just not so great for your back, but really working single leg work, core, and then, you know, really well-rounded shoulder program, basically. But again, focusing on those neuromuscular firing, those pathways. I think the other thing that I've really focused on, which I really wish I'd gotten a better hold of while I was racing, was the nutrition side of things. How to periodize my nutrition to stay, you know, as fit as I can be. In terms of, you know, I don't want to be hauling around an extra 30 pounds all the time, which graduate school did to me.
Yeah, I can edit this out, but I know that you've gotten a lot leaner in the past like year and a half. I remember I did not recognize you like a year ago. I don't know if you recall this, but either you were roller skiing towards me or something. Uh-huh. And I was like, who's that dude? Holy crap.
So I've gotten a handle on that, which is really good.
Yeah,
I think the other thing that I think has really helped is actually I'm constantly thinking about, where's the power coming from? How am I positioning myself on the snow to kind of maximize not only recovery, but also muscle activity, and what am I really going to load up here? Over the past year, I've really been focusing even more on that whole lumbopelvic stability and the use of the legs, especially in really steep terrain. You know, physiologically, we know that when you use, like when you, the easiest way for you to reach your max VO2 is to get on an arm bike. Right, so you crank away on an arm bike, you're really inefficient, that'll drive your view you up to max pretty fast. So, you know, over the years, as you know, I tend to say some pretty controversial things. So I know that you know there's been a lot of focus on core and upper body in skiing, and I'm actually starting to go a little bit the other way, because it's like, yeah, that stuff's important, but if you want to put somebody in the hole, make them, you know, work really hard with their upper body in an uphill. And if you want to keep your heart rate down, switch and be like 70% legs, 30% upper body, and your heart rate it'll drop right down.
So is this something, I mean, I was just going to ask you, okay, give me some examples of something controversial, but is that one thing?
Well, I think that it might be controversial to some people, because obviously there's been a lot of people looking at upper body stuff for a long time. But I think what you notice is, I mean, you know, the biathletes were here in town, and they skied for hours on the trails with no poles. When, you know, when I went out and ski, you know, I ski on these World Cup courses with these guys, and I'm nowhere near as fit as they are. But if I really work on that change up, I feel a lot better on those climbs if I'm using more of my leg, basically. And I think the key with that is you can't go ski on flat terrain without poles. Like here, you know, we have that flat learning area where everybody goes out and skates without poles all day long. You know, that's, you need to ski the trails without poles. So you'll not only learn to use the legs, but you'll also learn more about weight transfer. You have to get more efficient. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to it. So
you're ruining my whole hypothesis for myself.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I have incredibly weak legs in my view.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like for my build, my upper body is more efficient, but I'm like, holy crap, like I'm doing the wrong thing.
Okay. Well, I'm not necessarily. I mean, again, it's you know, there's no research out there that says this, but subjectively, you know, to me right now, it's kind of like, And you know, when we talk about how a ski runs and your positioning on the ski, you know, where's the accelerator on the ski? It's all about foot placement and leg strength and power application in those positions. So, you know, those are, I'm definitely focusing more on the lower extremity now rather than the upper extremity. You will not see me out there double poling around for hours and hours and hours, mostly because I don't do any marathon classic races, but you know, if you're gonna ski the ski classics, yeah, you need to go double pole.
And you also
want
to keep a smile.
Yeah, exactly. So
gosh,
I guess the other, there's another controversial thing. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of talk. Yeah, here we go.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just interested from, because
right.
This isn't really part of my work. I'm not up to date on all the.
So I've had a lot of conversations with people. There's been a lot of focus on ankle flexion, or in my world, it's dorsiflexion in V1. And what tends to, and again, you know, when I talk about loading up the legs, it's a fine line between, you want to load them up enough for what the terrain dictates. So you still don't want to get super low and load up your legs if it's not really steep. You know, you're gonna ski a little bit higher. But there's been such an emphasis on this kind of, you got to drive your knee out over the ski in V1, and there's got to be this aggressive angle, basically. From a clinical perspective, this has caused a lot of issues because now there's a lot of stress across the Achilles, and then you take into account the equipment changes that have happened. You know, some of the manufacturers are in zero drop boots. You know, a lot of folks are skiing on those ramped, you know, NNN bindings. So now you're dropping the heel even lower. So we've got, you know, we're starting to see a lot more of those. Well, I mean, we've been seeing those issues for a while now. And then, of course, the key with that to me is that, you know, how are you getting into that position? Are you making it happen when it doesn't need to happen? And is it causing a lot of too much stress across the system? You know, I always tell people that, you know, ankle flexion happens as the terrain dictates. So as the hill comes towards you, yes, you're going to need to have more. But the key is then, where are your hips in relationship to your feet? So a lot of times what people will do is they'll create that ankle flexion by really driving their knee and shifting laterally over that leg. And that's very quad dominant. It puts a lot of stress across the system, and it's lateral movement. You know, so if you look at the vector, you're no longer traveling straight up the trail, you're traveling laterally. So it's really inefficient from a skiing perspective. And the deeper, the bigger picture is that it's also indicative of poor lumbopelvic stability, because they're resorting to using their quad basically to hold this position over their foot, which is stressing out their Achilles. And it's extremely inefficient. So it's really about, you know, the foot position and the ankle position happens, but the body position is really important in terms of how you're driving that motion. It's hard to describe, you know, obviously without seeing pictures.
What is it that you're going to describe, or are we going to?
Yeah.
I have cameras.
Perfect.
Whatever works for you.
Yeah. So we can basically today, I was just going to show you some of the different things that I would use in the clinic that are a little bit more ski specific, mm-hmm. to kind of cue up the bigger muscles of the pelvis, you know, in particular the glutes, so that you can get good stability on the ski and hopefully release some stress across the knees and your feet when you're skiing. And ultimately, I mean, you know, your glute is the biggest surface area muscle in your body, and if it's not working in the ski cycle, then you're missing out. Basically, that thing needs to be kicking chicken.
So here's a question, because I know that you do emphasize glutes. I know mm-hmm. that you talk about that. And so I don't have super strong. I don't know if they're not actually. Okay, let me take a step back. Uh-huh. They're not just super burly glutes, right?
Okay.
You know, I'm the guy in the jeans that looks like a little baggy.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean I don't have.
Right,
develop glutes. I'm kind of a slim dude.
But that, you know, and again, it's everybody has what they have.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, like, in a build like mine, maybe mm-hmm. I'm just like, how do you know that it's firing when you're skiing?
And that's the hard part, is getting people to actually feel it. So that's a lot of what I do in the clinic. You know, if somebody can't physically feel whether they're firing their butt muscle or not, then we use a lot of different things for them to learn how to feel it. The best time is actually if you get a little bit of soreness back there through an exercise and then you go ski. If you're activating it, you'll feel it every time you turn it on. So sometimes those things are quite helpful. But yeah, I use a lot of tactile cueing. You know, I'm like, okay, touch it. Is it turned on? You know, those kinds of things.
Yep.
And I always say, you know, if you're doing it right, you know, if you go out for a ski and you're working it, you're going to feel it later. You're going to, you know, a couple hours later, your butt's going to be sore. You know, it's like a good day of tele skiing and you haven't been in a couple weeks, right? Yeah. And that first time you got to go to the bathroom in the morning, it's a real pain to get down there, right? Because it's so sore. But that's what we're looking for.
Okay. So I must not be activating it.
Thanks for listening to the Dave Sizlowski interview. If you have any suggestions for interesting interviews, please leave a comment on the Faster Skier site or email me at jason@fasterskier.com.